put him right out in front at the registration desk. That way I changed the group, and so is Levis. And I'm proud to be a member of the Grange group. It is, of course, the best AA group that exists. It has to be. This is the way it is for the program. And someone told me early in my sobriety, if you don't belong to the best group, then you're probably in the wrong group. You should change. And I think that's true. And in following with that custom, I've asked Blanky Blankenship if he'll read the traditions for us, also from the Grange. Thank you, Blanky. Very good. 5 years ago, I made the fellowship meeting. We had a speaker who made an impression on me. In the past 8 years that I've been around the program for one and sober for seven, I've heard numerous speakers. And this man stood out in my mind, and he was instrumental a lot in my obtaining the number of 24 hours that I have found. And I met him this afternoon again and talked with him for an hour or so before the meeting. And it's just a tremendous experience to listen to him talk and the AA that he has. And I think that I'm very fortunate tonight to introduce him. And being the type person that he is and the type AA, he's told me that in introducing him, all it was necessary to say is that he's Father Hillary, a member of good standing in the Cullman, Alabama AA group. So I give you Father Hillary.
Need that. And I certainly am going to need that. No notes. My name is Hillary Draper, and I am a grateful, recovering alcoholic. Good evening. And before I forget my manners, let me thank Lillian and the committee who did me the signal honor of inviting me to come back to the Pine Mountain Convention. I didn't realize it had been 5 years ago, but I remember that I thoroughly had a good time when I was here before, and I was just tickled to death when I got asked to come back. So thank you kindly for inviting me. One other point I would like to recognize Father Paul H., who rode shotgun all the way over here from Cullman, Alabama, and who celebrated a birthday recently. Stand up, Paul, and take a bow. Make him feel welcome. You see, you heard Lillian say, come back next year and bring a friend. And that's what I did. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells us that we are supposed to stand up and say what I was like, what happened, and what I am like today. For a long time, I misread that, and I understood what it was like, what happened, and what it is like today. I don't know it. And that's a different story. So I'm going to try, and I've got a watch up here, and this is, so help me, going to happen. This watch says right at 20 minutes after 8. And in 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes to 9, I'm going to be finished telling you what I was like. And at 9 o'clock, I'm going to be finished telling you what happened. and no later than 9:20, I'm going to be finished telling you what I am like today. Want a bet? Put your money on it. Here it goes. I have heard so many people say that they were born in a good Christian home at a very early age, and them in AA, then I'm not sure that's any way as to raise children anymore. But at any rate, I was born at a very early age in a good Christian home in Mobile, Alabama. And that home, Walter, was Catholic. Yes, even in the South. We were a ghetto, and I didn't know it. And in that home, we did not believe that it was morally wrong to drink in moderation. Make no mistake about it. We Catholics believe that getting drunk is seriously, morally wrong, just like the Baptists and some of the Methodists do. If I had to tell you what the philosophy of drinking was in my family, it was this. You drink as much as you want, as often as you want, whenever you want, but you don't get drunk. And there are many people in my family today who subscribe to that philosophy and who are beautiful people and are not alcoholic. But I can remember when I was a child. Well, first of all, I could say, you know, it was always in our family. We did not drink every day, but it was there. And if you asked me when I had my first drink, I couldn't tell you. The only one I know that may have gotten a drink earlier than I did is a Satan Jewish dentist in Dallas, Texas, who is a member of our persuasion, who says he got it when he was circumcised. He may have beat me by a few days. I cannot remember, but you were in a family situation. A wine glass with a little bit of wine and cold water, just like the big people. A few swallows of beer left in the bottom of the glass, just like the big people. I cannot remember when it wasn't there. It was always there. I can remember, too, seeing drunkenness. I had a great big relationship. Called one of the uncles, Harry. He was kind of the leader of the pack when that tribe came together for funerals, weddings. And the only thing is, Uncle Harry would take a few drinks to steady his nerves before he faced that tribe. And he'd get so steady he couldn't move. And the other uncles would help him home. But I can remember my mother saying to us kids, "You saw Uncle Harry last night. If you discover that drinking does that to you, you shouldn't drink. But you saw the rest of your uncles and aunts, perfect ladies and gentlemen." So if it could be said of anybody that he had a beautiful education, how to drink like a gentleman, it should have been me. Now, what is an alcoholic? Well, the big book, I learned that, says that an alcoholic is a person who has a mental obsession tied up with a physical compulsion to drink. I interpret that and say that for me, an alcoholic is a person who drinks and gets in trouble because she drinks, and drinks and gets in trouble because he drinks. Doesn't matter what age, color, creed, north or south, and drinks and gets in trouble because he drinks. You can get into trouble for other things besides drinking. But I suggest that if I got into as much trouble from eating watermelon as I did from the last 3 years of my drinking, I'd have quit eating watermelon a long time ago. And then I used to wonder, believe it or not, why am I an alcoholic? Me, with my splendid background, Southern aristocracy. Degenerate, I didn't know it then, but then. Magnificent education, brought up in a religious household, college, an eminent divine, degrees. What am I doing an alcoholic? And you know, after I'd been dry about 2 years, I asked the group at Cullman why I was an alcoholic. And you know, this great silence that comes over a group when everybody knows the answer and they're waiting to see who's going to zap the fool? Well, that silence came over the group. And in a minute, Juby, my sponsor, says, "Oh, hell, Father Henry, it don't make no difference how the jackass got into the ditch. Just get him out." Think that over. The glorious wisdom of AA. It doesn't make any difference how this jackass Hillary got into the ditch. The AA program, with the higher power whom I choose to call God, and not many people like you, but some of the people who are here tonight. Villarica, they've had a great influence in me. Atlanta has had a tremendous influence in my sobriety. Right here has had a tremendous influence in my sobriety. This has let the jackass Hillary out of the ditch today. And for that, I will be everlastingly grateful. I will be everlastingly grateful. Born into a family filled with tender, loving care. Given a God who was a tender, loving father to me. I was not introduced to a thunder, hellfire, and damnation God. No. I look back now and I can see some things. I was always wanting to be something that I wasn't. A towering ego. A consummate liar. I was taught not to lie, but I loved to lie. I was the kind that if the railroad train missed me by 10 feet, by the time I told you, it'd be 10 inches. I always wanted to look better than I was. My father was dead when I was very young. I know today I resented that very much. I had a marvelous grandfather who was the male image in my life. But the rest of the kids had a father. I didn't have one. I know today I resented that. I had a marvelous mother. She did everything she could to make up for that, and the grandfather. But nevertheless, it wasn't the same. I can't remember any problems with alcohol in the high school days, although it was there. There were people who got in trouble. Because my father was dead, my mother, I say, sold me up the river from Mobile, Alabama, to the tender mercies of the Benedictine monks at Cullman, and I never got away. But I had a marvelous time there. I got in with the families of my classmates, and in those far-off halcyon days, every housewife of Cullman, wait, the name, knew how to squeeze the grape and make that German-type grape juice. They did it with Cullman County strawberries. And if you all haven't tasted Cullman County strawberry wine before you got an AA, it's just too late. You'd have to wait to get to heaven. The most glorious color red I have ever seen in wine. An aroma, when you took the cork out the bottle, you could smell it in the next block. And a jolt, ooh, mercy. But again, no trouble. You're in somebody's home, small glass of homemade wine, piece of cake, lovely. I was so delighted with the monks at St. Bernard that by 1941 I asked if I could join. And they said I could try. And so 1941, I got in the monastery. You know what I discovered? The monks were not about to be outdone by the housewives of Cullman. And to my amazement and joy and delight, they also squeezed the grape and make that German-type grape juice. They made a little homebrew on the side. Yeah! Now, I wouldn't like you to think there's 50 drunk monks at Cullman. There's not. There's me. The rest of them are pretty normal people, as Paul can bear witness. And the monks didn't drink every day. On the big feast days, for an hour after Vespers, come together, if you know the German word, Gemütlichkeit, the homemade wine, the homebrew, pink lemonade for the panty waists. But again, looking back, I can see I was always the first one there and the last one to leave. I was always looking for when's the next time it's going to happen. The other monks didn't do that. And that's years later, when they were saying to me, trying to help me, how much did you drink? Trying to get on it. I said, well, from the time I was 19 years old, I always drank as much as I could drink, as often as I could drink, as long as I could drink, whenever there was anything to drink. I never knew when you took the cork out of the bottle or unscrewed the cap, you did anything with that but throw it away. Because if I was there, you wouldn't need it. And again, I look and I see, that's not normal drinking. But that's the way it was with me. That's the way it was with me. The big book says that we alcoholics drink because we like the effect of what drinking did for us. And for me, that was true. But it was also true for me that I was one of the people who loved the taste. I've heard people say they couldn't stand the taste. I loved it. I don't know why, but any kind of booze, doesn't matter. I'm the kind that take a big, big swallow and swallow it real, real slow and run around my mouth and then suck my teeth. That's me. I'm sorry. I experienced my first blackout at 19 years old in the monastery, Christmas party. That should have told me something. That's not a Satan sign that you got it, but it's pretty close to a Satan sign that you got it. Yeah. I don't tell anybody about that, but it's about 3 hours in a Christmas party that I can't remember a thing. And as you know, if you've experienced a blackout, the next morning it dawns on me what happened. I can't remember. Now again, trying to get honest, I know that way, way, way back in the back of my mind, I knew that alcoholism had something to do with that temporary amnesia. But you see, at that time, I loved everything about alcohol. And I wasn't about to admit that something that I loved that much and could do so much for me was to hurt me. And being an intelligent kid, I had to figure out what caused that amnesia. And I came to the astounding conclusion it was the cheese. Isn't that stupid? We talk about alcohol being cunning, baffling, and powerful. Who do we con the most, at least in my opinion? Me. In the last analysis, everybody knew I was an alcoholic. My boss knew it. Everybody knew it. Everybody knew it except me. Who do we con? At least it seems to me. There it was, the blackout, you know? There it was. I sometimes wonder if somebody could have come to me and said, hey, kid, what you've just described is a bad sign. Maybe you're one of the people with this obsession and compulsion. You shouldn't touch it. Maybe before the will was so damaged and the wheat sent in. I don't know. But it's idle. I can't worry about that today. Nothing I can do about it. We went to school in Kansas. Kansas monks belonged to the Lottie Moon Circle, WCTU. They didn't drink. Want to bet? It was hidden drinking out there. If I had to classify myself as a barroom drinker, a closet drinker, I'd have to say I was a chicken house drinker. Because that's where they kept it in Kansas when I was there. And I got news for you. There's a lot more going on in the chicken houses of North Alabama today than just laying eggs. The disease is progressive. I progressed. I came back in Coleman to study theology. We got a new abbot. They're not making it anymore. The monks in Coleman are not drinking. We tried that on a national scale, and it didn't work. You know that. You Al-Anons know it. Nobody else does. You can't stop a man from drinking or a woman from drinking if they want to drink. They'll get it. Yeah, and I don't have to tell you how I got it in a monastery, but we could get it, period. The pattern is the same. I drink as much as I can, as often, whenever I can. 47, I'm ordained a priest. There are no overt signs at that time that Hillary Draper's a drunk. Although I think I had crossed the invisible line by that time. If there had been, in 47, he would not have been called to orders. The Catholic Church has got enough trouble without ordaining drunk monks. But I am getting in trouble with the boss. These personality clashes. And drinking is concerned. Drinking is involved. But he doesn't say anything to me about that. If he had, I'd have been on him like a bee on a bulldog. I said, what are you doing talking to me about drinking? I'm associate principal of this prep school. I'm teaching 5 classes a day. I'm doing a first-class job. Why don't you go to some of these other bums over here? Which was a lie. I wasn't doing the job I could do. But the big book says that, too. It says eventually the alcoholic can no longer tell the difference between truth and falsity. Yeah. When the drunk goes to answer the doorbell, he doesn't think she's drunk. He thinks he's in good shape. When he wonders how everybody told he was drunk. Yeah. He can't tell the difference. Well, the boss gave me a geographical cure removal. You know what that is, huh? The alcoholic fouls up his LaGrange nest so bad, he decides he'll move to Pine Mountain. And he moves to Pine Mountain. But in short order, his Pine Mountain nest is just as foul as his LaGrange nest, because he's moved himself with it. That's why they don't work. Anyhow, I got sent to the mountains of Kentucky. And if Walt wants to see some mountains, I invite him to come on up to the Cumberland Gap area, where Virginia, Tennessee, and Kentucky come together. What President Johnson declared a disaster area. I knew it was a disaster in 1955. God bless and save us. But I have to tell you quick, the very first morning I'm there, the priest I'm replacing says, you eat your breakfast and all three meals over next door at Aunt Sally Coon's house. That's your house, but Uncle Albert's a good Catholic, retired. He takes care of the church while you're riding the circuits. And whenever you're home, they feed you for the rent. So we go over. It's a hot September morning. Uncle Albert's sitting there, lovely man in his 60s. I'm here, the priest. The other priest is over here. Uncle Albert's son, state trooper, he's down there. His two sons, 19, 18, all they got on is a pair of shorts. Hot September. There's a glass sitting in front of me. Conversation is waning. I picked it up, all beat it, and I took three great big swallows. And you've seen the atomic bomb blast. My eyeballs turned over. My eardrums went in and out. I couldn't breathe. Again, I'm convinced that if I hadn't been an alcoholic, I would have screamed bloody murder. But I don't say a thing. I just hang on till the tremors pass. Uncle Albert's got a glass. The other priest got one. The priest, the boy, the troopers got one. The boys haven't. Well, after that breakfast, we were stepping high over the weeds going back to that church. And I said to the priest, in God's holy name, what was in that water glass? He says, moonshine, 120 proof. I said, for breakfast? He says, anytime you can get it. Beautiful place to send a budding alcoholic, and I bloomed. Gee. We called to Coleman there 5 years later. I'm dean of the college. I'm into whiskey now. I've got to have it. I don't have to drink it every day, but I've got to have it. The pattern's the same. I build up these personality clashes with the boss. I get fired again, this time to the Delta of the Mississippi. If you think the Delta of the Mississippi is in southwest Louisiana, it is not. It begins in the lobby of the old Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee, and it goes downriver 40 miles on the Mississippi side, 20 miles on the Arkansas side, and comes to Yazoo City. And if y'all haven't lived in the Delta, you don't know the South. Those people don't know the Civil War was lost. They don't even know it was fought and couldn't care less. Oh, Lord. I thought I'd come to paradise. I had so much trouble with the empty bottles. But when I got down to Mississippi, I could pick up the phone and say, Mamie. And she'd say, be right there, Father. Father Malachi tells her, I'll tell you that story to be sure you know Mamie's the bootlegger. You're a little slow tonight. Gotta get sharp. And Mamie would come, take the dead soldiers out, give them decent Christian burial, bring in new recruits, and send you a bill at the end of the month. Except I was coming apart at the seams. I was coming apart at the seams. Well, I've got a minute to get to the transition. I became president of the college, believe it or not. By this time, I'm really an alcoholic. I'm really blooming. As president of the college, I suffer the agonies of the damned. Everything any alcoholic has ever suffered, the dry heaves, the running fits, the... When we get to laughing too much at Coleman, you know, laughter's part of the recovery program. A new person in the program comes and he says, what are they laughing about? She's not, he's not laughing at anything. But you let him stay around 6 weeks, and one night they'll go, ha ha. And you know they're getting better. AA teaches us the ultimate humility of being able to laugh at ourselves. You never laugh at me. But once I can laugh at myself, then you can come laugh with me. You can come laugh with me. Oh, Lord. Where'd you put the automobile? It's not your car. It belongs to the parish. It costs $5,000. Where's the car? I don't know where the car is. It's not yours. When did you see it last? See there, I'm sweating already. When I was drinking, I had the shakes and the hot flashes. I don't shake anymore. Boy, oh boy. Jail. I'll never forget the morning I woke up in jail. I've only been in one jail, and I've had a lot of AA people say they've been in jail in every state in the union. I've only been in one. I never want to go again. I never forget the morning I woke up in jail. Well, yeah, I always woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Nothing to drink. Impossible to get a drink. And this morning I woke up at 3 o'clock. I thought, honey, bed I'm laying on. There's no mattress. Where's the pillow? Opened up my eyes, there were bars at the window. I figured, oh, you've played hell this time. That was as president of the college. You know, wouldn't you think that would have stopped? But it didn't. That didn't stop. It just went from bad to worse, bad to worse, bad to worse, until finally in December of 1967, the president of the college was making a State of the Union message, 8 o'clock at night, in front of all the important people in that college. The Board of Trustees, the Board of Governors, the faculty, Senate, the Student Government Association officers, everybody. And I made that speech. The only thing is, the last thing I remember was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, taking one more drink to steady my nerves. And I don't remember a thing from then till the next morning. I can hardly tell you that. Because I begin to realize what it must have meant to the constituency of that college to have to listen to the drunken president trying to make a report. And it's obvious to everybody there he is drunk. That was my bottom. I say it was my bottom, but it really wasn't. What my bottom was about 3 days later, when I'm still throwing dust in the air, acting like nothing's happened, and I go to see the chancellor. And he listens to me, and then he says, sit down, I want to tell you something. We had a meeting of the Board of Trustees yesterday. I said, well, I wasn't there. See, cunning, baffling, powerful, I've got myself elected to the Board of Trustees. I think I can't fire me. He says, no, but we had a quorum, and there was only one thing on the agenda, and that is your resignation. This is December, 67, bold, brassy, mean. I say, when is it effective? In June? He looks at me with all the compassion. He says, it's effective right now. Sign here. And he read me the riot act in 3 glorious scenes. He told me in no uncertain terms that I was a disgrace to the priesthood, that I had dragged my own name through the mire, that I had destroyed the good name of that college, that the monastery had all it could stand of me, that I had driven them nearly crazy, and that was the end of it, and I could get out. I can hardly tell you that. Because for me, that meant that the 2 things I loved the most in life, namely my priesthood and St. Bernard, were gone. As far as I knew, they could never come back. But let me tell you the insanity, if you want to see the insanity of this program. When he finally let me out of that office, I went right downstairs to my room and had another drink to steady my nerves. Here I have lost everything that means anything to me in life. Now what do? Right downstairs to have another drink to steady my nerves. I had no trouble with step 2. The insanity. But the old man didn't leave me there. He says, I'll try to help you get a job anyways in the country. You're a good teacher, but you cannot stay here. We've had it. Get out. But he says, what I wish you'd do is go somewheres and get some help for your drinking problem. He doesn't even know the word alcoholism. And I said, yes. I could have said no, not to the first part of that injunction. I was gone, a lost ball in the high weeds. But go somewheres, get some help. I could have said, I said yes. And for a long time, I didn't know what led me to say yes. Today, I'm convinced it was all the Al-Anon-type people who loved me so desperately and who knew nothing to do for me except to pray. And that's why I love Al-Anon today as much as I love AA, and I do. The old man had heard of a place named Hazelden that was good to do something for people who were bad to drink. And that's up in Minnesota. And on January the 15th, January the 14th is my dry date, 1968. January the 15th, I was on the train headed for the cold, wild tundra of Lower Canada, which is Minnesota. And you talk about cold. I left Birmingham and it was 67 degrees, and I got up there, it was 20 below zero with a wind chill factor of 45. I thought I was going to die. And I didn't know what they did to you. I didn't know whether they cut something out of you, turned you inside out, blew in your ears. I didn't know. I didn't even know the word alcoholism. And I know this. There are what I call gold-plated south traps. They'll take the alcoholic in, dry him out, introduce him to the pills, and turn him loose to run again. There are many great treatment centers. There's a man here in the front, and I think his is a great one. But Hazelden, at that time, it was a 21-day program. You know what they did? They had three AA meetings a day. One in the morning, one in the afternoon, one at night. They introduced you to the 12 steps of AA. They had some private sessions that I've come to know, like our closed AA meetings. They gave me the big book. That's not true. They sold it to me. They said, read it. I immediately looked inside to see if it had an imprimatur from a Catholic bishop, Walt, and it didn't. And I says, I'll be damned if I'm going to read that Baptist literature. They're not going to brainwash me. And I wouldn't read it. Now, let me show you how sensible that is. Because they gave me the little 24-hour-a-day book, and that doesn't have any imprimatur in it. I was crazy about that. I read it every day, but I wouldn't touch this. Well, as I say, it was a 21-day program. The first day I was there, that's the second day, really, I went to see the counselor, and I'm dressed up, and he says, Father Hillary, says, the last time I'm going to call you Father, because you ain't nothing but a drunk. Ooh, they talk so ugly. My pious ears. Said, you got no right to wear that Roman collar. Somebody had snitched. And you can take it off. You are not in good standing in the priesthood. You have no right to be called Father Hillary. And you are a drunk. And said, secondly, don't plan on 3 weeks for this program. I said, of course not. I reckon I'll get it in two. Oh, they said, oh, no, no. Said, we find for doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, clergymen, undertakers, college professors, researchers, takes 3 and 4 times as long to get this simple program. That's what they told me. And I said, why? Look at Joe Ladd. He said, because you all keep up such a dreadful front. It takes a long time to get behind that and find out where the real Father Hillary lives. And they were right. They were right. Well, I was one of the slowest learners they ever had. Now, that's the truth. But after a while, it became apparent to my cunning alcoholic brain that the people who were getting out of Hazelden were working, doing, taking steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and in that order. And it further became obvious to me that if I didn't take steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I was going to be in Hazelden until Gabriel blew his horn. They didn't apparently care as long as somebody was paying the bill. So I decided I better get with it. I got the big book, and one night I stayed up all night and read the 164 pages. Next minute I went, I says, I got it. I got the first step. My life's unmanageable. I'm powerless over alcohol. He says, you ain't got nothing. Get back. I says, I got it. He says, you're full of resentments. I said, I don't resent anything. I didn't think I did. I resented everything. I resented the Abbotpaw. I resented everybody. But I couldn't see that. He says, get back and read the big book. You know, I've got the first step. They kept me on the first step for 5 weeks. And you know what? I still didn't get the first step. I didn't get the first step. This is my opinion. You can do what you want with it. I didn't get the first step until approximately 2 years after that, when I finally got to the master teachers at Cullman in the AA group there. I'm grateful for everything I got at Hazelden. But what I got at Hazelden was up here. It took the master teachers in Cullman, the grassroots, to get it out of here and down here, where action's the magic word, where something happens. But I guess they just gave up. You know, they figured, well, we'll let him go. Second step, oh, I love that. I haven't got time to tell you the signs of insanity. But I've given you one of them. You've had one sign of it. This business of could restore me to sanity. What I had been going through was insane. And I could be restored to sanity. The third one made a decision. I was so happy to find the dear Lord. He hadn't gone away from me. I had kind of gone away from him. I really had. But I was so glad to find him again. The fourth step said, made a search and to fill his moral inventory. I did it. Took it to the counselor. He says, oh, hell, you've gone and done it wrong again. You took an immoral inventory. He said, it's a moral inventory. You put down the good and the bad. I said, I can't think of anything good. He says, didn't you love your mother? I said, yes. He said, put it down. Now, that's the way they were. I can't help it. We got to the fifth step. Admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature. That was easy. I've been doing that for years. I'm a Catholic. I've been admitting it to God, to myself, to a priest. The only thing is we've been doing it anonymously. In the confessional, which is the dark box with a grill and a curtain. And if you change your voice, they can't tell who it is. But AA says you do it eyeball to eyeball. And that do make a difference. And the wise old church has learned. Nowadays, we can take that sacrament in the church eyeball to eyeball. Yeah. Took AA to teach us. I did it. Did it, yeah. Now pay attention. I've just finished. Just finished. Feel good. You know, if you take a good fifth step, how you feel. You want to die and go to heaven right then before you louse it up again. At least I did. But that's why you got those other steps. So that's not good as that. Anyhow, this man said to me, now, Father Hillary, if you really believe alcoholism is a disease, when you go back to Cullman, are you going to tell people you're an alcoholic? I said, of course not. That is the stupidest question I have ever heard. I said, first of all, you don't understand a thing about the South. We don't run around with a big sign, watch out for me, I got tuberculosis. If a man's sick in the hospital in the South, that's what he's there, that's his business. No, I'm not going to tell people. And I said, furthermore, it's a stupid question. You know I cannot go back to Cullman. Now, mind you, I told you the things I loved the most were the priesthood and St. Bernard. They're both at Cullman. And this alcoholic, I can't go back to Cullman. He says, why can't you go back to Cullman? See, I'm not the first priest in Alabama who ever had a problem with drinking. I do believe I'm the first priest who ever found the Marvelous Recovery Program of AA. But in those days benighted gone by, if we had a priest and he had an alcoholic problem, if we could get him dry through the insane asylum or doctors or however, just dry, we never let him return to the scene of the crime. We sent him to Georgia. Or Texas. Or Nevada. Or Colorado. But you don't come back here. No. I said, you know why I can't go back? I was drunk in public. I disgraced my own name, the name of the college, the priesthood. I can't. He says, Father Hillary, the bank president at Coleman might have lost his job because of the disease of alcoholism. 9 times out of 10, he'd have to go back, not as president of the bank, but to pick up the pieces. When are you going to stop running? And I said, All right, I'll go back to Coleman. Now, you convince the board of trustees to let me come back. You know what? He did, they did, and I did. I wish I could tell you that my return to Coleman was like the story of the prodigal son in the Bible. You remember that? The boy goes off and wastes his money and wine, women, and song. Got nothing in the hog pens, eating the slops of the hogs as lords and servants in my father's house. I will go to my father, ask his forgiveness. The father's looking for him, coming down the road. The father runs out to meet him. He doesn't even get a chance to say he's sorry. The father tells the servants, get the ring, put it on his finger, get the first robe, strike up the man, kill the fatted calf. This my son was lost, is found, his dead's come to life. It wasn't like that at all. And I can imagine, I used to, in my talk, this is a change for some of you, I used to say that if I could ever get a chance to see the minutes of the Board of Trustees, when the agenda was, shall we let Father Hillary return to the Abbey, I was going to look it up. But I'm in a position today where the minutes of the Board of Trustees are in my filing cabinet. And I could look at them any day or night of the week. Yet AA has told me, what good would it say? You simply, perhaps, put people in a bad position. And I'm proud to say that I have never looked those minutes up. And that's AA that taught me that. I don't intend to look those minutes up. And I can understand what the monks, when the boss man says, they tell us we've got to let him come back. I can hear him say, oh my God. Oh my God, you're going to tell Lord in heaven. Then let me come back. If I had to tell you what my return to the monastery in Coleman was like, I would tell you it was like 2 porcupines making love. You know how they make love? Carefully. I wish I could tell you I came back to Coleman, got in the AA group at Coleman, lived happily ever after. I didn't. They do things differently nowadays. I came home, and I believe that if I could have found the group, I would have gone to it. But I looked in the phone book, and they weren't in the phone book. So I concluded they weren't at Coleman. I was out for whatever reasons, all unrelated to the recovery part of this. And from September till December, well, actually it was longer than that, but be it as it may, I stayed a loner. I did read the big book. I did read the 24-hour day book. I shared my experience, strength, and help with people I thought it would help. What did I have to share? I didn't have anything to share. I hadn't got the first step yet. I was already at the 12th. We talk about two-steppers. I was a classical one-stepper. I didn't have anything. But in December of that year, mind you, I've been dry. I haven't had a drink. That's how marvelous the program is. A priest who loved me very much and who today is my secretary, non-alcoholic, walked up to me. He said, for your information, AA is alive and well in Coleman. Call this number. He's not an alcoholic. He found out there's an AA that's been on there for years. Yeah. Too poor to have a phone number. But since I'm in, we got a phone number. So he gave me the number. He says, call it. Next day, he said, you call it. Yeah, he didn't answer. 3 days. He says, what time you call? I said, midnight. I'm not proud of that, but that's exactly what I did. He says, call him now. I called. And I got my sponsor, Juby. He had known that I was president of the college. I don't think he knew I lost the job because of alcoholism. But the first thing I said to him, I said, Mr. G., this is Father Hillary out at the college. I'm an alcoholic, and I need to go to an AA meeting. About that tone of voice. There was this long silence on the phone. You know, AA people are realists. The first thing that man ever said to me, was, Father, are you drunk now? I said, no. He said, well, it just so happens that we got a meeting tonight, 8 o'clock. I'll be along, pick you up at 7:30. I said, fine, Mr. G., but don't come to the front of the college. I will meet you down in the woods near the grotto on the road to the cemetery. I am not proud of that, but that's what I told him. And you know, I often think today, it's a wonder he didn't say to me, hey, Father, when you're serious and you want this program, let me know. But no, he meets me down on the road to the cemetery in the dark of night, close to the grotto, and he picks up this stupid alcoholic to take me to my first meeting in Coleman, Alabama. Would you want to believe that it was January the 14th, 1969, when I got to my first meeting in Coleman? And I walked up those steps with Juby. And if you come to Coleman now, I know we've got the best group in the world. But you should have seen it in 1969. The plaster was coming down off the ceiling. It was about as big as that corner where the Monas are sitting over there. The wallpaper was coming down. There was a hole in the floor where we swept the dust down on the man below us. Oh, and one old naked light. It was old. And I didn't see a single one of my kind of people. They were all foot-washing Baptists. I thought, oh, what am I got into? What am I into? Now, I'm sorry. Today I love them all. And you should see our club room today. Oh, it's not the most stylish place, but it's beautiful. And anybody can go in. And we're thrilled to death to have them. And if you came, I'd love to have you and take you up there. But I wasn't happy that night. Oh, Lord, I thought if I could just get out of here, I'll never come back again. They didn't tell me. And I really think I would have left right then, but you see, they were smart. I didn't have my own car, and I sure wasn't going to walk all that distance back out to the college. But while all this is going through my mind, here comes a lady. I had known her as a splendid Catholic matron from Decatur, about 30 miles up the line. I did not know she was an alcoholic. Her name was Rosemary. She walked up to me and she said, Father Hillary, come on in. You're right where you belong. We're so glad to have you. You don't have to drink anymore and you're going to be all right. Come on in and sit down. And she took me by the arm. Ladies and gentlemen, I am convinced that if Rosemary hadn't been there that night, I'd have been off and running. I don't believe I could have stayed dry much longer. But you know the beauty part? I did not know for 2 years that that was a put-up job. They didn't tell me until they thought I was strong enough to bear it. After I hung up the telephone, Juby called Decatur. And he says, Rosie, get down here tonight. I need you in Coleman at the meeting. She says, I can't come down there tonight. I got a meeting of my own. He says, I don't give a... You come down here. I got a Catholic priest coming in. I don't know a damn thing about priests, much less Catholics. You're a Catholic. Get down here and help me with him. Now, that's true. And when this stumbling, drunken priest puts out the hand to AA, Rosemary is there. Who is willing to go to what lengths to get what you have had? I didn't know that. For 2 years, Rosemary's still in the program, and she and I are thick as two thieves, and I'll walk a long ways to that lady. That was the beginning. I was as dumb as they come. I asked all the wrong questions. I will never forget the night in our group that I asked for a financial account. They told me that I wasn't sober enough to understand, and that the money was in good hands, and all I had to do was put it in the basket. But I also remember my delight 4 years later when another stumble bum asked for a financial accounting, and I said, "You're too dumb to understand what to do with the money. Just put it in the basket." That's just a sample. Oh, Lord have mercy. They told me it would get better. I didn't know. I'd been president of the college. And when they took me back that September, the boss man said, "I guess you can go over and see if they'll give you a job in the college." And so I go to a man whom I have taken out of the woods. If you know where Kelly, Alabama is, most people don't. It's a little beyond battleground. Smart boy. Got him into college, got him to the University of Alabama, got a PhD, head of the education department. I remember our coach saying to us, "Be nice to the bat boy on your way up. You may meet him on the way down." And here I had to go to this man and ask him for a job. And he says, "Write me a letter of application." You can imagine what I wanted to tell him. But he didn't say it like that. He was correct. And I did. I wrote a letter of application, and they gave me a job teaching, but only so long as I could stay sober, is what they told me. And that's the way it started. I was back in the ball field, but I was right down at the bottom. That's all it was to it. But I did manage to stay sober. In the AA group, at that time they only had one meeting a week on Tuesday evening. And the first night I came was a Tuesday, and they said, "There's some members who want a closed meeting, so we're going to have a closed meeting on Friday." First time I've been there, and I said, "That's fine, because the meetings I like are closed. I don't need to go to the open meetings. One meeting a week will be fine for me. Good." Now, they didn't tell me, but after that got rid of me, the old-timer says, "You know that young priest? If he only goes to one meeting a week, he'll be drunk and shot out of." And so they would say to me on Friday night, "We're going up to Decatur, Father. We'd love to have you go with us." I'd say, "No, thank you." They'd say, "Saturday night, we're going down to Birmingham. We'd love to have you go." I'd say, "No, thank you." They'd say, "Monday night, we're going to Oneonta. I'd love to have you go with us." Well, you know, it got so I thought, I guess I better go and help the poor devils. And then I was hooked. We were off and running. Every night we were off to another meeting. Go to the meetings. That's why I'm a great believer in go to the meeting. Go to the meeting. And there I was, going to the meetings, teaching a class. Little by little. Things were getting better. They were getting better. I remember the very first year that I was in the group, and I went up to see the boss, and I said, "You know, this is my birthday in AA, and we're supposed to celebrate." He says, "Oh, God, you're not going to get drunk again." I said, "No." That's how little they know of it, you know. But what I said is, "We're going to have a birthday party, and you're my Al-Anon, so come go." He didn't want to, but he did. It was good for him. It was good for him, little by little. My sponsor tells me I have to tell you this. I'll put that here, and then I'll do you this, and then I'll quit on time. In 1972, the boss man who fired me had retired. And the monks, a couple years ago, when they elected the Pope, the monks do the same kind of thing. When they're going to elect a new abbot, they lock the doors, and they start praying. and they start voting. And it's all real private and so on. And in August of 72, the monks elected me the seventh abbot of St. Bernard. That's what this ring and this chain is all about. And it says something very special to me about the monks of St. Bernard. In the election process, when it's all over, they have to sign loads of papers. They ring the church bells, and only the full-fledged monks can vote. So the rookies are all waiting to hear who's been elected. And they send out word, Father Hilary's been elected. And the young ones are running up and down the hall, shouting all the way with AA. And does that say something to you about AA? And somebody was teasing me. We put out a little paper. In the last issue, there was a big picture on the front page. The Pope and Father Hilary. And if you didn't think that I gave thanks to AA, without AA, it's beyond my wildest dream that me and the Pope would be standing on the same platform and shaking hands together. As far as I'm concerned, you know, that's it. You can't get much better in the Catholic Church. What has happened in my life in the past 18 years is described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 183. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. I go through Atlanta frequently in my travels for the church and for AA. I never go through Atlanta that I don't meet somebody that I know. It was always that way, even in my drinking days when I didn't want to meet them. But now I have a new freedom. I'm not afraid to meet anybody anymore. And to say, what can I do for you? A new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. I used to, but I understand what they're talking about. We will comprehend the word serenity. We will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. I've seen that. A new serenity, a new peace. No matter what happens. A day at a time. Let go and let God. Try it and see. Get out of the driver's seat, stupid. And you know, that's another question I ask. Well, I haven't got time to tell you that. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we wait for them. And they have materialized in my life just like that. Oh, I have bad times. I have that. That's natural. But I've learned how to live soberly and justly in this world a day at a time. I got time to give you my finale. Here it is. I told you I think the visit with the Pope and the personal visit, not just being in an enormous audience, but standing there with him, talking to him backwards and forwards, is the acme of part of my life. But there's another thing that happened. Several years ago, I had the opportunity of going to the Holy Land, to Palestine. And that would never have happened except for AA. And we went to all the holy places, and I just couldn't get enough of it. But we went down to Bethany. And if you remember your scriptures, I believe it's St. Luke, who gives the exact story, tells us of a home in Bethany where there was a brother and two sisters, Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. They were great friends of Christ's. And whenever the going got particularly rough, you find Christ down at Martha and Mary and Lazarus. Well, he's off preaching, and they get word that Lazarus is sick, and the apostles tell him, and they expect he's going to go over there and do something about it. He's been healing the sick everywhere. The deaf, but he doesn't. And then they get word that Lazarus is dead. And the apostles say, uh-oh, he's dead. And they say, we'll go see. Well, you read the scriptures and you see that Martha is looking for him. And I'm sure we miss the tone of the voice when she sees him and hot puts it down the road to confront him, just like many an Al-Anon. Because she's saying, here's this hotshot rabbi who has eaten us out of house and home, who has just expected we would do everything for him. He's been curing, hadn't done a blessed thing for us. Here, when he might have been some use, where was he? But she doesn't say that. What she says is, no. If thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. I think you have to hear in Martha's voice. She's really upset. She's really upset. And she doesn't know how close she came to tearing the sheet, you know. She's facing the Almighty. But the Lord understands. The Lord, and he says, Martha, Martha, thy brother will live again. And all of a sudden, Martha is converted. All of a sudden, Martha is touched. All of a sudden, that whole business is turned around, and she says, yea, Lord, yea, I know. At the last day, I know. And he goes in to comfort them, and he says he wants to go out to the cemetery. They do. And when he gets out there, he says, roll the stone away from the tomb. And I was there. And Martha's back in her good sense. She says, roll a stone from the tomb. He's dead 4 days. By this time, he stinks. And ladies and gentlemen, I realize that I stink. But I surely know what Lazarus felt like when he walked out of that tomb. Thank you.